Good morning, everyone. We are reading in Book 1, the Book of Beginnings, Canto 5, the Yoga of the Spirit's Freedom and Greatness. And I think we stopped last week on page 85 at line 397. This is the Yoga of the Spirit's Freedom and Greatness, the second of King Asvapati's yoga. After the soul's release, Sri Aurobindo shared with us the secret knowledge that King Asvapati had gained by the action of the Mother of Wisdom and her powers of inspiration and intuition and revelation, and this has given rise in him to the will, the hope, and the will for a great new step, not for himself alone, but for the whole world. Those wonderful spiritual states which he has glimpsed, he says, must become his home. They must become normal for the whole of humanity. And with that aspiration, very, very strong aspiration, his soul has withdrawn from its entire past and taken off like a rocket towards the heights. He mounted, burning like a cone of fire. And in response to that intense burning aspiration, there comes a very powerful descent, an intervention, which takes hold of him and brings about a new second transformation of his whole nature. This makes him aware, one of the things that he's able to perceive as a result of this transformation is a secret nature. This is not the earth nature. This is not the divine nature. It is something in between, a secret nature that is native to the subtle worlds. Sri Aurobindo tells us that this secret nature is a border sovereign. She rules the frontier lands between the material world and the subtle world. And she can be a very dangerous force to the immature seeker. But because of Asvapati's very great spiritual development, he is able to subdue this secret nature. She surrenders to him. She offers him all her powers. We were reading on page 85 about her power of mind. This is definitely not our surface mind. It's not the divine mind. It's the inner mind, which can be found in the subliminal parts of our being. So we were reading that this mind can suspend or change Earth's concrete law, the law of the material universe. A simple fiat of its thinking force, just a command, or the casual pressure of its slight assent. If it just says, yes, all right, without putting any force of will behind it, just even that casual pressure of its slight assent can liberate the energy, capital E, the energy dumb and pent within its chambers of mysterious trance, the deeper levels of mind. That mind energy can make the body sleep, a puissant arm, a weapon, a power to be used. It holds still the breath, the beatings of the heart, while the unseen is found, the impossible done. This is a real yogic achievement, that the breath can be stopped, the heartbeats can be stopped and the consciousness can go deep, deep within. That energy communicates without means the unspoken thought, a direct communication of thought without any words. It moves events by its bare, silent will, acts at a distance without hands or feet. That is where we stopped, I think. I think we can start at the back today. Marie-Ange was complaining that we always start at the front. Will you begin, please, Lella? Thank you. Anybody would like to ask or share anything?
What is this secret entity?
This it here, this is the power of inner mind, the mind not subject to the domination of matter. So it can light up this giant ignorance of the world. It can light up this very limited life that we experience here. It can illumine them with a prophet sight. Usually when we have this word prophet, we think of somebody who can foretell the future. But it's not necessarily that. A person who can foretell the future, who has the divine sight to look and see future possibilities. It's because they're in touch with a higher consciousness. So this prophet sight is the power of vision of a much higher level of consciousness than the normal one. So that inner mind can bring that illumination. And it can do all kinds of things. It can invoke, it can call in the Bacchic rapture, the intoxicated delight of adoration, or just the opposite, fury's goad. Furies were terrible, vengeful spirits in Greek mythology. They would give you no rest. They would be goading you constantly with terrible thoughts and feelings. This inner mind power can wake up in our body the demon, the diabolical being, or the God, the divine being. Above all, it has the possibility to call in the omniscient and omnipotent, the divine presence, and awake up a forgotten almightiness within, our own divinity. Yes, it's not moral, no. It's not moral in the sense of only arousing good things or bad things. It arouses powers that can be used divinely or demonically. It is neutral in that way. And in the next sentence, Sri Aurobindo elaborates about the power of mind a bit more. He says, in its own plane, on the mental, the pure mental plane, it's one of the planes that King Aswapati will be able to explore in book two. In its own plane, mind is a shining emperor. It rules everything there, full of light. But even here, in this rigid realm under the domination of matter, mind can be a king. The logic of its demigod idea. A demigod is a half-divine being. The ideas formed on the pure mind plane, they have a different logic from our reasoning power. But that half-divine idea on the mental level, higher mental level, can bring about, in the leap of a transitional moment, very suddenly and unexpectedly, surprises of creation never achieved even by matter's strange, unconscious skill. Material nature has brought about such amazing creations, and the more we explore her mechanisms and the things that she has created, the more and more amazing seems to be her power, no? But he says this power of mind can achieve even greater surprises of creation. And then he reminds us, we should try never to forget this, that all's miracle here and can by miracle change. What is a miracle? Mother has beautifully explained it. If you drop a stone, it will fall. But if somebody or something intervenes, that fall can be prevented. It won't reach the ground. So there are actions, there are movements that have consequences. But if a higher consciousness intervenes, those consequences can be changed. This is what she explains about a miracle. Just a minute. So, he says everything's a miracle here. Everything in this material world has been brought about by the intervention of higher levels of consciousness. And if those higher levels intervene again, if we call them and ask for their intervention, things can be changed, even here in this rigid realm which is ruled by laws of physics and of matter.
Mother said in agenda, in Aidan Freeman's day, the miracle not exists. But the miracle is everywhere, all the time, depends the consciousness on the mind. Miracle is not exist when you tell something, oh, it's miracle.
I experienced really a miracle the other day. And I had to say, yes, this extraordinary sequence of events could only have happened by a conscious intervention from somewhere else. Otherwise it was completely impossible. It's such an amazing thing to experience that. So it's something, we call it a miracle when the consequences are different from what our normal expectations would be.
Are you going to share your miracle?
I think it would be too much of a long and twisted tale. Well, I can tell it in brief. I was looking for something. I was really desperately looking for something that I was responsible for and that I had mislaid months ago, 18 months ago. So I put out various feelers here and there. What could I have done with this precious thing? And very strangely, something else came to me, equally precious, even more precious. And then the next minute, I remembered what I'd done with the first thing I was looking for. Now, if I had remembered the first thing first, I would have got that. But because I didn't, she gave me the other thing first. I was just overwhelmed. I still am overwhelmed. It had to happen in that order. And this thing that I didn't even know about, this treasure, came. So, like that. A miracle. Yes, if they're not too long. Can everybody hear Prakash?
I remember the quote I really cherished where Mother said, in all circumstances, call the one who lives in constant miracle. And then this morning I stumbled upon a quote from Mother, or a writing from Mother, which is related to this one, where she says, finally, you do not grow anymore by growing reasonable. You stop growing altogether. That's what she says.
By being reasonable.
By being reasonable, we stop growing altogether.
Wow. If we recognize it as an intervention of a higher power, then we can have the joy of gratitude. You know? Otherwise, we just take it for granted. Oh, it happened just like that. Good or bad. Or whatever. You wanted to ask something, Don?
No, I think that which is reasonable is stopped, and that which we take for granted.
Oh, naturally, it's like that.
Yeah, actually, you can go far beyond, and yeah, but if you stop at Jesus, that's good.
So he says, this power of mind that can bring about miracles, this is that the edge of might. It means like the sword blade of that power. That secret nature's edge of might. That's how she works. That is her power. This is the trouble about starting at the back. I can't see who's sitting there. Turiya, would you read?
On the margin of bread in my various rooms, in windows of tramline and glory of God, where mine is matter of the life and form, and soul that pulses its force by its own power, she meditates upon mighty words and looks on the unseen links that join the parted spheres. Thanks to the initiate who observes her laws, she brings the light of her mysterious fear. Here, where he stands, he speaks on the prostrate world. His mind no more cast into matter's mold. Over their bounds, in steps of candid breath, she carries their magician possesses. And the formula of their stupendous speech, in heaven and hell, becomes the rulers of the earth, and the universe the seed of mortal beauty.
Thank you. The material plane is the plane that we are familiar with. Even here, all is miracle. But there are so many other great immaterial planes, many different levels of life worlds, mind worlds, worlds of higher consciousness still. She works there on the margin, on the borderlines of those great immaterial planes, in kingdoms of an untrammeled glory of force, power of action, dynamism, that is untrammeled It's not encumbered or hampered or obstructed by anything. No. On those great immaterial planes where mind is the master of the life and form, here in our material plane, matter, body, are often dominating life and mind. But in those immaterial planes, mind has a much greater power. Mind is master of the life and form. And in those realms, soul can directly fulfill its thoughts by its own power without needing to go through the body and the life. So in those planes, she, that secret nature, that mother of dreams, she meditates, focuses upon mighty words, words of power. And she looks, she notices, she observes the unseen links, the connections that join the parted spheres, the upper hemisphere of existence and the lower hemisphere. We think of them as separate, the world of matter and the world of consciousness. But in fact, there are many, many links between them. And she can make use of those links. So from there, from her station and these great immaterial planes, she brings thence, from there, to the initiate who observes her laws. An initiate is somebody who has a special knowledge. Here in the a special knowledge. Here in the material world, we have amazing scientists. I was watching such an interesting film yesterday about the processes of evolution, the hidden processes of evolution that are going on in our body, in our DNA, in our genetic codes and all that. People have to study and examine and learn for decades to really be able to grasp what something new, some new revelation. So similarly, there are beings who keep in contact with this secret power, this secret nature. And if they know how to follow her laws, the way the scientists understand how to follow the laws of physics, she can bring to that initiate, she can bring the light of those mysterious realms, those immaterial realms. She brings that light to her initiate here where he stands on this prostrate world of matter. His mind has become free because he's her initiate. His mind is no longer cast into matter's mold. He's no longer dependent upon the physical brain. So over the boundaries of those immaterial planes, she brings to him in spurts of splendid strength, like gushings out of a fountain. She carries their magician processes, the processes that link those worlds and ours. They look like magic to us, the formulas of their stupendous speech. There, it seems, in those immaterial realms, the power of the word is much, much greater than we can imagine. She brings those processes and those words until both the higher levels and the lower ones become purveyors to earth. A purveyor is somebody who supplies you with things, a supplier. So they contribute some of their resources to earth. And in this way, the universe, our material universe, is made the slave of mortal will, a human being who has these powers can make the material universe obey him. We call such a person an occultist. But this, it's very important to note that King Aswapati never set out to study occultism. These so-called occult powers have come to him in the course of his spiritual sadhana. They've been surrendered to him, offered to him joyfully by that secret nature. So now Sri Aurobindo is going to tell us some more about this fascinating person. Would you read, please? Yes.
It says here, line 25, till heaven and hell become surveyors to earth, so our very simple fundamental idea of heaven, goodwill, kindness, goodness, hell, selfish grabbing, everything seems to disappear here. What is being surveyed?
The powers. Those powers, whether they seem to us, to our moral notions, positive or negative, they are powers. Ultimately, they are divine powers, even if they've been distorted on the lower levels. And this initiate is able to make use of them in a constructive way here in the material world, wherever they seem to be coming from.
Voodoo, for instance, which is based on speech and things also, like all magicians, abracadabra, the certain normal things that he gives you smile when you hear it, he confirms it. And voodooism is a negative form of using these powers. Can be.
And it may be used also positively. It depends on the initiate.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very dangerous. That's why it's better not to connect to it.
But yeah, the important thing is that these capacities, these possibilities have been given to King Aswapati because he's reached a stage of mastery, that he is able to handle them. And they are sent to him not in order to perform miracles and impress people, but to help him on his mission, on his journey. And we should remember that the aim of his mission, what he's engaged in, why is he doing all this? It's in order to bring about a divine life upon earth for humanity in a divinized material world. That is his aim. There's no selfishness or ambition or anything about that. It's to help make the world fulfill its divine potential. Yes, it's said we had some wonderful line. Oh no, it's still to come about her reaction to him. Still, we have to learn a little bit more about her. Line 427. Would you read, please?
Incalculable, incomprehensible.
combined to make the unreal true, or liberate suppressed reality.
Let's pause there. It's one of Sri Aurobindo's mammoth sentences. We'll pause there. So we'll pause there. We'll finish the rest of the sentence later. Let's first understand what he's saying in this first half, or try at least. A mediatrix. We're familiar with the term a mediator, not somebody who tries to reconcile people who are having difficulty understanding each other or cooperating. Mediatrix is the feminine form of that word. So this secret nature, she's a mediatrix. And she's mediating between veiled and nameless gods whose alien will touches our human life. Their will is alien to our material universe, belongs to other planes, but there's always a contact. We are carrying connections with all those planes within us, within matter. She's a mediatrix, no? Mediating between earth and those other realms ruled by other powers. And she's imitating the world magician's ways. We read about the world magician who has this almighty occultist who has erected in space this seeming outward world which we experience through our senses. Sri Aurobindo told us that this secret nature, she can also do that kind of thing, and that she's imitating the ways of the world magician, the creator of this material universe. So just like he has created certain grooves, certain laws, tracks which have to be followed, she too invents for her free will. She herself binds it to follow certain grooves and thus gives the appearance, she pretends, that for her magic freaks there is a binding cause, that they're a result of cause and effect. No? She involves all the worlds, all the planes of existence in this action of hers. She makes them all accomplices of her mighty violence, her daring leaps into the impossible. From every source she has taken her cunning means. From all the worlds and all the planes she takes what she needs. She draws from the free love marriage of the planes elements for her creations tour de force, for this incredible achievement. A free love marriage is an unofficial one by the force of attraction. So she brings the planes together into these kind of partnerships. So with all these different elements from all the different planes and areas of the subtle universe, she has created a wonder weft of knowledge incalculable. A weft, she's woven it all together into a wonderful fabric where everything is connected with everything else. She's made a compendium. A compendium is something like an encyclopedia. It's a huge book containing lots and lots of different information. A compendium of divine inventions, feats, the achievements of the divine creative power. She has combined all these things to make the unreal true, or liberate suppressed reality. These might be two different ways of saying the same thing. Well, lots of realities are suppressed. Lots of things that are real are not manifested openly. No? They are there waiting their chance to manifest. We may suppress it from ourselves, but I think here he's speaking on a larger scale. What can be manifested, what can be brought into the world.
Immortality
is
suppressed reality.
What is?
Immortality.
Immortality, yes.
It's all about that.
Yes. So actually he's suggesting that her will is unbound, actually. So she herself creates certain rules for the game that she's playing. Says we have to follow these grooves, these tracks, these laws. These are the rules of the game. Self-bound free will. Actually, anybody who is involved in creating things has to do this, you know. To start with, anything's possible. You have to somehow devise for yourself a kind of discipline about, in this particular act of creation, what are the rules I'm going to follow? If you're a poet or a musician or a sculptor or whatever, a dramatist, and the better you are at controlling your free self-will, choosing the right grooves, and knowing when to ignore them, and then the more satisfactory your work of art will be. Sri Aurobindo had all possibilities of literary expression at his command. But we see in Savitri with what amazing artistry he's making use of those infinite possibilities to convey very precise impressions and knowledge to us.
Did Sri Aurobindo stay current or engaged in the literature of the day?
To a certain extent. I mean, as long as he was in Baroda, very much so. We are told that he was getting boxes full of books every week or every month, and he was keeping in touch with European and Indian literature. After he came to Pondicherry, I think there was a kind of gap when he was not so much directly in touch, I mean through literary productions or anything like that. I think he was increasingly in touch by this mind power that he was able to know more and more about what was going on in the world just by sitting in his room. But then when the disciples started coming and the ashram was formed, there were several literary sadhaks who used to keep him informed and send him materials to comment on and put him in touch with certain critics and writers. So we have some very interesting comments. It it's not a huge body of his work, but there are these letters on poetry and art. It's one of the volumes of the collected works, which one can explore. And he wrote that book, The Future Poetry. So now we stopped in the middle of a sentence. Let's go on with it. Yeah, you're rushing ahead, as usual, Alice. Pell-mell, yes. It goes with Circean. So let's... Sorry?
Pell-mell, she...
Thank you. So these mysterious lines give examples of the things that she's drawing and the sources that she's drawing them from. She's doing this in her unhedged Circean wonderland. This adjective Circean refers to the Greek enchantress Circe. She appears in the voyages of Ulysses. He and his companions reach her island. She's a great enchantress. She turns them all into animals. Ulysses has to save his companions and win back their freedom. And finally, he's able to win her goodwill, and she gives them good advice for the next stage of the journey. He had to make her fall in love with him. Yes.
And
she made them into pigs and goats and all things like that. So, since you are here, Lou, I can't help saying that I connect Circe with Baba Yaga. In the much later Russian fairy tales, there's this witch figure. And the prince, who represents the seeking soul, is bound to encounter her on his way through the forest of life. Mm-hmm. And he has to show her that his will is stronger than hers. She tries to subdue him. But he has to speak to her very brutally and say, "What is all this nonsense? Give me a meal, give me a hot bath." And when he has shown her that his will is stronger, then she helps him. So I think that is this secret power. Mm-hmm. Yeah? She can be powerful, she can be dangerous. If she masters you, she can be very dangerous. So Circe is a bit like that. Ulysses has to win her heart, win her help. Then she will set everybody free. They are not animals anymore. And after a certain time, he stays with her quite a long time, I think 7 years or something in the story. Then she tells them what's the safest route to go on, to continue their journey.
And then she warns him, because he takes his boat with his companions, and then she warns him that he will meet the Sirens.
The siren, she warns him about the siren.
Which originally are not women, fishes, but women and birds. They're listening to the sound, they terrorize the mariners who came along. So he has himself bound to his shipmast, and his companions, the rowers, he has closed the ears with weights, so they could not hear. And he could hear the sounds of sirens.
Yes. Nobody has heard the sound of the sirens and survived except Ulysses. So he could do that with her good advice and her warning.
Exactly.
Yes. Mm. So it's, but the, Circe had an island, a limited domain, but this secret nature, she has a whole unhedged wonderland at her command. And there, in that wonderland, pell-mell, she shepherds her occult mightinesses. Pell-mell means many beings, many creatures in disorder, rushing around in disorder. You've heard of Pall Mall in London. It's the same idea, that it was so full of carriages and people and fashionable outfits and so on. They called that Thoroughway Pall Mall, Pell Mell. So she shepherds all her occult mightinesses, and here are some examples. Her mnemonics of the craft of the infinite. A mnemonic is a little short formula that helps you to remember something complicated. The only one I can ever remember is the one about the months of the year. 30 days, November, April, June, and so what's the first one? Yes. So this is a way of remembering something you might otherwise forget, a mnemonic. So she's got mnemonics, she's got formulas to remind us about the craft, the infinite, the way that the divine works. Then she's also got jets of the screened subliminals, caprice. A subliminal, it's that inner world of mind, life, physical, which is below the threshold of our, or beyond the threshold of our waking consciousness. So jets, little shootings, spurts of those from the subliminal, from that capricious world. It's also a free world. Tags of the grammary of inconscience. Tags also are little phrases to help you remember or to sum something up. Grammary, it's what does Reinhard Hicks say about grammary?
An occult learning or enchantment, having been originally skilled in grammar, and hence something magical. I don't understand the definition here. Again, an occult learning or enchantment, having meant originally skill in grammar, and hence something magical. Grammar is magical?
Yes. There was a time in the history of the development of humanity when you had to have a very special education to know about the meaning of words, the power of words, and the way to arrange them correctly, grammar. And to the people who didn't have it, this power appeared magical. Or hieroglyphs, all this. So there was a time, and actually it's very interesting that the word grammar and the word glamour are actually from the same root. Glamour is a quality that casts a kind of magical spell on you. It's connected with this grammary, with grammar, the art of using words powerfully.
Does this relate to the formulas of their stupendous speech?
Yes, probably, yes. But the formulas of the stupendous speech, these are kind of spells, magic spells. So grammary is like that also. Yes. And we were told that she's an enchantress, no? And she has a wand, a magic wand. And that wand is the power of mind. This secret nature. So from the inconscience also there are certain magical powers are available. She takes them from there. From the infinite, the subliminal, the inconscience. She takes them also from the very highest level of the sovereign truth without a law. And she collects thoughts that were born in the immortals' world. She collects oracles that break out from behind the shrine. An oracle is a divine message or a person who conveys divine messages. And usually these oracles, these special people, at least at certain times, they're available in a sacred place to be consulted. These oracles are not waiting to be consulted. These are divine messages. They come suddenly, unexpectedly, from behind the shrine. Warnings from the demonic inner voice. Here, this is not demonic. This is not diabolical. This is the spirit voice that speaks from inside, where we, Socrates is famous for having mentioned that he has this daemon, this guiding spirit, and he has to obey what it tells him because it always gives him good advice. So warnings from the demonic inner voice, and just peeps, little glimpses or lightning leaps of prophecy, of glimpses into the future or of higher spheres. Intimations to the inner ear. A friend of mine, this regularly happens to her, that she hears an inner voice telling her things. And she says, always it comes true. Whatever it says, it always comes true. So intimations to the inner ear. She doesn't hear it with the outer ear. Abrupt intervention, stark and absolute. Some massive power may come down and change everything. And the superconscience, unaccountable acts, those actions that come from the very highest levels. All these things, all these different elements are woven into her balanced web of miracles and the weird technique of her tremendous art.
Excuse me, I looked up the grammaria.
Grammaria.
Well, according to this wiki, it's grammaria. It says the obsolete meaning was grammar or learning. The archaic meaning is mystical learning, the occult, magic, or sorcery.
So that answers Don's question. So shall we go on to the break? Francis, you like to read? Please continue. Thank you. She surrenders all her knowledge and her powers to Aswapati, this bizarre kingdom, this borderline kingdom of hers. He becomes the ruler of it. At first she resists, as one resisting more the more she loves. She gave all her great possessions and her power and her lore, her learning, her secret knowledge, she gave, compelled, she can't help it, with a reluctant joy. She yields her whole self, herself she gave, for rapture, for delight, and for use. She will be helpful to him. In this way, she's absolved. She's set free from her aberrations, her lost wanderings in deep ways. She finds back the ends, the real purposes for which she has been made. So she has been helping all kinds of evil, of wrong things. But now, against the evil she had helped, she turns her engined wrath, her tremendously powerful anger, and her invisible means to slay. She can destroy those harmful adverse powers. And she surrenders all her dangerous moods and her arbitrary force, her force that's been used just like that without any particular purpose or meaning. She surrenders all that to the service of the soul and the control of a spiritual will. She's been a despot, an arbitrary ruler, but a greater despot tamed her despotism, that spiritual will of Asvapati. She is assailed, attacked, surprised in her fortress. It's like when the army of Arjuna reaches Manipur and conquers Chitrangada, no? Assailed, surprised in the fortress of herself, conquered by her own unexpected king. She falls in love with him, no? And she's fulfilled and ransomed, set free by her servitude, by surrendering to him. She yields, she gives way to him in a vanquished ecstasy. She experiences this intense delight of surrender. And her sealed, hermetic wisdom, her occult knowledge is forced from her. That hermetic wisdom consists of fragments of the mystery of omnipotence, of all power.
This is a very strange line, that secret nature, if the reference is that her, in her deep ways, the aberrations, this is us, right? Psychologically, how does it fit?
There are black magicians. There are people who use this occult knowledge for very evil purposes. Most of us don't have that capacity.
This is not a plane of our being necessarily. It's not part of...
This is some potentiality that is there in our subliminal. But most of us don't go in for practicing occultism, either white or black. But it's very, very important for us to know about this. Yes, this is a very dangerous realm. It's right to be scared, and it's very interesting that if we start to go within ourselves, often there's a kind of warning. Even Savitri receives this warning. She ignores it. But until we are quite pure and know that we have the protection of the higher powers, it's better not to push it. It is possible to get stuck in this intermediate realm where she rules. You don't rule her, she rules you.
That's the part that's scary.
Yes, that's the part that's
and
scary.
And that must be happening. To what extent does that have an influence on our life? The more we aspire and try.
Yeah, we are aspiring and trying for higher truth. We can always put ourselves under the protection of Sri Aurobindo and the Mother, or the light of the Supreme, however we want to think of it. No? And when things get scary, that's what we should do immediately.
The Mother said, occultism is a dynamic spirituality.
Yes, when it's under the control of a spiritual will. When it's just under the control of a black magician, it's but that's what it becomes if these hidden powers come to you in the course of your developing sadhana, as they came to Sri Aurobindo, as they come to King Aswapati. But purity is the key, the precondition. This is when Aswapati encounters the Supreme Divine Mother at the climax of his quest. He really understands who she is, and he wants to bring her power and love and blessings down for the whole world. But he realizes that he himself is helpless. The only power that he could possibly have would be to surrender himself completely to her.
So in this scary stage that we are talking about?
In which stage?
In the scary stage that we are talking about.
Well, I hope we don't have too much contact with these scary planes. But if we do, by chance or by for whatever reason, come in contact with them, then I think the protection is whatever is the name, the divine name for you, you have to take it at that moment. Ask for protection, ask for guidance, particularly protection. But as I said in the story of Baba Yaga, the prince has to show, he's the symbol of the seeking soul, he has to show that his will is stronger. And that's what happens here. No, she surrenders to the service of the soul and the control of the spiritual will. This is not to be used for human purposes, all this knowledge. She didn't read any of this.
Yes.
Okay, interesting.
Shall we listen to the one previous one and the after one?
Yes. Yes. The after one is very beautiful.
Yes. Thanks to Sri Aurobindo.